This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Today we are interviewing Maureen McGee-Bollinger, Deputy Superintendent at Theodore Roosevelt National Park in northwestern North Dakota, and Blake McCann, Director of Resource Management and Science at the park. Maureen has been with the National Park Service for nearly 33 years. She's been at Theodore Roosevelt National Park for the past 2 years, was previously at Mount Rushmore for 10 years. She's worked in the Everglades, at Mount Rushmore, Gateway Arch, and Independence. She holds a Master's of Science in Resource Interpretation from Stephen Austin State University. Blake began his career in wildlife management at Great Smoky Mountains National Park, and he's since worked on wildlife research and management throughout the United States. His work at Theodore Roosevelt includes wildlife and livestock management, vegetation management, planning and compliance, cultural resource preservation, and fire program administration. Big job. So, welcome, Maureen. It's good to be talking with you. And Blake, good to be talking with you, too.
Thank you for the invitation.
So, please describe the park at Theodore Roosevelt. How big is it? How many units? What's your visitation? What are the unique characteristics of the park?
The Theodore Roosevelt National Park consists of 70,447 acres of land, and it's divided into three separate units. There is the South Unit, the North Unit, and the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. They're located in Billings and McKenzie counties of North Dakota. The park's got an annual visitation of approximately 800,000 visitors and has quite a few unique features, one of which is the Maltese Cross Cabin. That was Theodore Roosevelt's first cabin when he came into the Dakota Territory. It has a very significant petrified forest area, and you can find petrified wood throughout the park, and a really dynamic landscape that is changing all the time.
And where's the park headquarters?
Park headquarters is located right next to the town of Medora.
So, Blake, are all of those three units, are they all under your management?
Yeah, so the park, the three units referenced are all under management of Theodore Roosevelt National Park. And so in terms of my work areas with wildlife, compliance, et cetera, would apply to all those NPS lands.
You got a lot of driving to do to get around to all three, don't you?
Yes, it would take quite a bit of driving to visit all three places in one day.
Yeah, how far distant is the northern unit from the southern unit?
Well, by highway, it takes about an hour and a half.
Where are the bison located?
So we have two herds of bison, one in the north unit and a separate herd in the south unit. Those are the two locations, and each herd has to be managed separately because they are geographically separated.
So, yeah, they can't mingle with one another. They're separate units. Do you transfer animals between those two units?
Historically, the herd in the south unit was the first one to be established in 1956. Uh-huh. Brought in some bison from Fort Niobrara, Fish and Wildlife Service herd.
Uh-huh.
And then in 1962, transferred some animals from the south unit to start the north unit herd.
Oh, I see.
So they're very related. Over time, though, they were managed without additional animals being introduced, but there is a pretty large initiative with Department of Interior now to look at best management practices for the species globally, and we are starting to explore how we might best move animals between federal herds to improve genetic diversity.
Uh-huh,
and we started to evaluate that at our park. We brought some animals into the North Unit from Badlands National Park and also from Rocky Mountain Arsenal in Colorado, which is a Fish and Wildlife Park.
Right.
So we're trying to understand theoretically using modeling and other techniques with genetics, and then on the ground looking at integration of those animals that we bring in from other places to augment our herds.
So why and when was the park itself established by Congress?
So the park was established in 1947, as Theodore Roosevelt National Memorial Park. So that was the South Unit and the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. And it was established to honor the memory of Theodore Roosevelt. The North Unit was added in 1948. And in 1978, Congress redesignated the area as Theodore Roosevelt National Park. It also established the 29,920-acre Theodore Roosevelt Wilderness at the park's North Unit and part of the South Unit.
So is there any evidence of glacial activity in the past in the park area?
Yeah, I think I can address that one. You know, the southwest corner of North Dakota was not ice-covered during the last glacial period. However, some upland plateau areas of the park's North Unit show evidence of glacial activity, including glacial erratics, these rocks that would have been carried and then dropped by glaciers. So glaciers did touch some parts of the northernmost reaches of the park.
Is there any geologic activity that goes on in the area?
Well, the landscape is basically shaped by water and wind. So that's what creates this. The erosion creates the badlands that we have here in the park. And it's that movement of water through the ground that creates a lot of the slumping and other activities that we observe. It is part of the natural landscape and what the wildlife experiences here, and the native plant communities have developed to be in harmony with. From an infrastructure standpoint, the movement of land certainly creates some issues with maintaining our park scenic roads.
I'd
say that would be the biggest area that we see in real time, issues with land movement.
How many miles of road are there within the park units?
Don't have the total number of the mileage in the park.
Yeah.
I can tell you with that South Unit Scenic Loop Road, currently 6 miles of it are not open to the public because, as Blake mentioned, that dynamic movement actually took out a piece of the road. So for the last couple of years, we've been working on getting that road repaired, 6 miles of the scenic loop in the South Unit.
I see. Okay, and how large a staff do you have at the park?
We've got roughly 24, 25 permanent employees, people that are here year-round.
Uh-huh.
And then we almost doubled that number in the summer. We took on about another 20 seasonal employees that work here just during the summer season to help us take care of the influx of visitors. Because the vast majority of our visitors, they come here in May, June, July, and August. June, July, and August are the busiest months of the year.
Uh-huh. And what do they actually come to see at TR?
Well, everybody's got a different reason for coming to the park. Some of them are coming to see the wildlife. Some are coming to experience the geology and the incredible beauty here. There are people that come because they want to learn about Theodore Roosevelt. They want to see his cabin. They want to go to the Elkhorn Ranch where he had his ranch house constructed. So probably for every visitor that we have, there is another reason why they come.
So tell me about the landscape. So you have grasslands and badlands, prairie. You have a very diverse landscape, don't you? And some lakes as well, and the river.
Yeah, that's true. The habitat, as I mentioned, includes that erosive landscape of buttes and drainages. We have mixed grass prairie and sage scrublands. Along the river, there are cottonwood galleries. And there are ash draws and drainages of side channels. And then on most north-facing slopes are covered by juniper. So it's pretty diverse in that respect. Sage scrublands occur along many of the valley bottoms as well.
And you have parts of both the north and south units designated as wilderness. Is that right?
That's correct. There's 29,920 acres, if I'm citing that right, of designated wilderness in the park. So a little over 10,000 of that is in the South Unit, mostly west of the Little Missouri River. But nearly all of the North Unit, about 19,000 acres, is wilderness.
So has that area always been undeveloped, or did they have to remove development structures in order to designate it as wilderness?
My understanding is that many parts of the park were once ranched. Looking at historic records, there were roads that were reclaimed, and there are archaeological sites from where settlers had homesteads that occur in the park. But you know, decades have passed, and much of those human effects have been overtaken by natural processes, and you know, we have what pretty well represents a natural looking landscape. So you can still see some of the remnants of that activity in the park.
So let's talk about the wildlife. How many species of birds are there in the park, or have been identified in the park?
You know, I'm not sure the exact number. It is an extensive avifauna that we have here in the park. Includes resident and migratory species, so depending on when you might visit the park, what you would see would change. You know, notably, we have a lot of raptors, so golden eagle and bald eagle. We have a variety of hawks, falcons. Interesting species like burrowing owls that are here and interact on the prairie dog colonies. They use the prairie dog burrows for their nesting.
Is the park on a flyway, north-south, a migratory route?
I don't offhand remember the exact flyways. I believe that we're not in direct alignment. We do see waterfowl here, but not like you see over on the east side of North Dakota with that flyway.
So what other kind of mammals do you have in the park?
Well, sure. You know, I mentioned the two bison herds. We do have a herd of feral horses in the south unit and a small population of longhorn steer in the north unit. Elk and pronghorn antelope occur primarily in the south unit. And I say primarily because, you know, these species range and sometimes they occur in different places. On the other hand, bighorn sheep and moose occur primarily in the north unit. And prairie dogs are in both north and the south units. Whitetail and mule deer and a variety of carnivores, including coyotes, badgers, fox, etc., occur across all three units. We do have mountain lions, but many carnivores that were here historically are absent, so bears, wolves, martens, and wolverines and lynx might have passed through this area at one point or another. Some sightings of these species have been reported in western North Dakota, but we're not aware of the existence of those particular carnivores on parklands currently.
And are the bison genetically pure, or do they have some cattle genes mixed in?
Yeah, so that's one of the questions that we've looked at with molecular tools in recent decades. We understand that there are some cattle genetics in the park bison herd. There's much research going on right now to better understand bison population genetics and cattle integration. You know, I would be citing off the cuff, you know, if we're talking about nuclear versus mitochondrial genetics. In terms of mitochondrial genetics, we don't have cattle mitochondrial DNA in the park herd, but there is some small segment of the nuclear genome that appears to have some cattle integration. We think that this is something like 1-2% of the nuclear genome, but research is ongoing.
How are the bison contained within the park boundary, or do they wander outside?
Yeah, the bison are contained by a perimeter fence. It's woven wire, and it's 6 to 7 feet in height. So all three units actually are fenced. The north and south unit have that 7-foot woven wire to keep the bison in, and the elkhorn has barbed wire. The fence also serves to keep livestock from outside of the park entering park lands.
And then do you have any prairie dogs? Do you have any other rodents?
Yeah, there are a variety of rodents, including prairie dogs. We have mice and voles and a pretty complete assemblage of small rodent species that are an important part of natural ecology. And, of course, those small carnivores, it's part of their prey base that constitutes their diet.
How about snakes and lizards?
You know, it's surprising. I think people may not realize the variety that we have here. There's a number of amphibians and reptiles in the park. Tiger salamander, plains spadefoot toad, great plains toad, Rocky Mountain toad, boreal chorus frog, and leopard frog. In terms of reptiles, we have prairie rattlesnakes, We have racers, bull snakes, plains garter snakes, western hognose snake. We have snapping turtles and painted turtles. And you get into more upland areas, we see shorthorn lizards. And there's a sage lizard as well that's here in the park.
Are there some species that were previously present and are no longer there?
Yeah, elk actually were extirpated in the area, along with bighorn sheep and pronghorn antelope were decimated, and there were efforts during past decades to bring those species back. In particular, the park was involved with reestablishing an elk herd in 1985 and some prior work to bring bighorn sheep back to the area in cooperation with the state of North Dakota.
I think of bighorn sheep in terms of elevated areas. Are there some mountains within the park area or higher elevation sites?
It's not what we would call mountains, but there are great elevation changes from the tops of buttes down to the river bottom, and some of these steep escarpments seem to be a good habitat for sheep.
Uh-huh. Are there any animals that are on the endangered species list?
We have a list, so we consult with Fish and Wildlife Service to understand what species may be here. We're not aware of any that actually frequent the park. But there are some that may occur, and those include northern long-eared bat. It's endangered or in the process. Tricolored bat, which is proposed endangered. Piping plover, which is threatened. Red knot, which also threatened. Whooping crane, Dakota skipper, and monarch butterfly. But like I said, we have not had observation of these species on park lands to suggest that they're commonly here.
Are there any cave areas that would provide habitat for bats?
We don't have what would be technically called a cave. As I mentioned, with the water moving through the buttes, there's this clay substrate and intermingled with coal seams, and water tends to flow along some of those boundaries between layers in the strata, and it creates what's called erosion tubes or sinkholes, and so there is potential for some hibernation of bats in those elements of the landscape. But we don't have any actual caves that would serve that purpose.
So you have some responsibility in regard to fire management. Have you had any serious fires in the park area?
We have, and I'll say my role with fire is more administrative. I have the Border Park Fire Zone that reports to Theodore Roosevelt National Park, so we have staff that are stationed here at Theodore Roosevelt, as well as over at Voyageurs National Park, and we service 8 MPS units for fuels and prescribed firework, as well as suppression. 2021 was a very dry year, and you know, we're in a semi-arid environment, and we have more moisture some years and less others. When we get really dry, we can have a fire that starts for a variety of reasons, and we had a large one just south of Medora that started on Forest Service that approached the park. And within a couple days, we had another large start on Forest Service just north of our north unit. And that one actually burned into much of the north unit. So we do have a lot of potential for wildfires here. And I mentioned the coal seams that are everywhere in the buttes will sometimes catch fire. So we'll have coal seams that will burn and smolder for many years, and currently we think we have several dozen of those that are on fire, and when we have moisture, for instance, this fall or this year, we've been more moist than we were in 2021 when those two large fires occurred. Those things tend to smolder and not pop up, but when we get into a dry cycle again, then those ongoing coal seam fires can come to the surface and start new fires for us to address. So we have very, very active fire season, some dry years here at Theodore Roosevelt. And of course, different habitats at other ends of the zone. And so our fire personnel stay very busy. And we work collaboratively with interagency fire with other federal, state, and local agencies to cooperatively work to manage wildfire.
So by manage, What is your policy? Do you let fires just burn themselves out, or do you have any suppressive techniques?
It's mostly suppression when a fire starts that is, from whatever unintended cause. You know, we look at the landscape, and we have sort of a mosaic of clay buttes and intermingled with habitat, vegetation that will burn. And so we try to identify the places that we can hold the line against fire moving. And so we're not a huge park. We do have neighbors, and we work to fight fire as best we can to prevent it leaving the park or burning across the park, et cetera. So we try to suppress and hold the line where we can with wildfires.
Do you have some unique plants in the park?
We do. I mentioned it's a mixed grass prairie that is in much of the upland areas. There are a few species or taxa of plants that have been identified as locally limited or rare in terms of how abundant they are.
Uh-huh.
Some of these are sedge species. There's some grasses. There's one in particular known as needlegrass. Those are probably the most vulnerable to impacts because of their rarity in the park.
Do you have any invasive species among the plant?
Yes. And so we do have an active program to treat invasive plants. The two primary invasive species that we focus a lot of energy on are Canada thistle and leafy spurge.
Do you have some cheatgrass?
It's here.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Have you noticed, as a result of climate change, changes in the plants that are growing in the park?
I don't know that we have really had the ability to observe specific changes in vegetative communities. My understanding is that those are things that tend to take some time to shift in terms of what plants are thriving and which are not doing so well to cause a particular change. But certainly it's something to think about, and we can understand from how things have changed over the last 10,000 years that we've had different habitats and vegetative communities on the landscape that animals have been responsive to. So we've looked at isotopes in bison teeth in North Dakota going back thousands of years and infer from those relationships what their diets were. And we've seen those types of changes in the past, and bison tend to be a pretty resilient species. So I think one of the things I could point to is, working to make sure that we have a healthy herd that are genetically diverse, that will have that broad genetic playbook to deal with change in the forage and the habitat that they have in front of them over time.
So you found fossils within the park?
Yes, we have pretty extensive fossil resources here at Theodore Roosevelt National Park. They date to the Paleocene.
Uh-huh.
So it's plant fossils, invertebrates, things like bivalves and snails, some vertebrate species assemblages as well that are globally rare. These particular formations that occur in the park are just not at the surface in many places in the world. So it hosts a unique assemblage of fossils that are scientifically important.
Do you have some fossil research projects going on in the park?
We work with the state of North Dakota.
Right.
Their paleontologists have ongoing work in the park. We recently completed a paleontological inventory to help us better understand the abundance and distributions in the park as well of these fossil resources. And that's important because when we're doing things like repairing roads, we want to understand what may be in those areas that we want to avoid and preserve. And also just to help us understand where some of these fossils are to monitor and protect them.
The Bakken oil boom really affected that part of the country. Has the park been disturbed by the oil boom?
The park has been impacted by the oil boom in a few different ways, one of which is just bringing new people in. So we're getting people in visiting who normally might not have had an opportunity. But there's also the flaring that goes on, burning off the natural gas that can impact our night skies, particularly in the north unit of the park. Flaring has an impact. And when you bring in a lot of people to the area, that impacts housing. So the housing market is tighter, and as well as the financial, trying to be able to hire employees, particularly locally. They've kind of been hired up by the oil boom. So we've had some challenge with housing, and we've had some challenge with being able to find enough employees. But for park natural resource impact, probably the biggest is the flaring.
Uh-huh. I saw on the website that there's a livestock plan. Is that what's the status of that right now?
Well, we are basically out for comment with an environmental assessment.
Uh-huh.
So individuals can navigate to our project site and comment. They can view the environmental assessment and then formulate comments to submit on it. The purpose of the plan is to address livestock, so specifically horses and cattle herds within the park, under relevant laws, regulations, policies, and management priorities, including the conservation of native species and natural prairie ecosystem functions.
In North Dakota, are bison considered livestock, as they are in Montana?
So state by state, there are different perspectives on bison, and yes, in North Dakota, they are considered livestock. The National Park Service on federal lands considers them to be wildlife.
So are there any other effects of climate change that you can see, and what do you anticipate is ahead of you?
I don't, as I mentioned before, know that we have specific on-the-ground day-to-day changes that we're observing and recording.
Uh-huh.
I will say that we have air quality monitoring station where we're collecting data, and you know those are building information that can help us understand not only just any pollution effects or things of that nature, but mm-hmm. changes in weather and changes potentially in the long term as what we understand is climate. But concerns would include, you know, under a climate change scenario, precipitation, so the extremes of potential floods or droughts might go hand in hand with altered fire patterns. As you mentioned earlier, potential changes in plant community in response to different precipitation mm-hmm. and temperatures. And what would come with that would be changes in foraging behavior for wildlife. I think there's probably also implications for exotic species control.
For the coming summer, what do you expect in terms of your climate?
Boy, I really don't have a long-range forecast. It's hard for us to know. What it's going to be, we'll have to see what the precipitation is over the winter and spring to really get an understanding of what things are going to be like for us here in terms of moisture and the plant community response.
I think it's supposed to be an El Nino year, isn't it? So that could have some effect.
That's what I've heard. I don't know if I'm well-versed enough to comment beyond that.
All right. Well, we've run out of time, but I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. This has been great. And I'd like to get up there and visit Theodore Roosevelt Park. So thank you very much.
Yep.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guests today have been Maureen McGee-Bollinger, Deputy Superintendent, and Blake McCann, Director of Resource Management at Theodore Roosevelt National Park in northwestern North Dakota. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to js-wilderness.com and see if additional features of our website. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Shell.